Get ready for a week-long celebration of music, community, and fabulous fun with Joy Radiothon 2024. Joy has the largest collection of rainbow podcast content in the world, and you can help keep us out loud and proud by donating during Joy Radiothon 2024. Just go to joy.org.au/radiothon. Mark it in your calendars because Joy Radiothon returns June 1st to 7th. And remember, we all flourish with joy.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLBTIQ community radio station, Joy 94.9.
Joe, how's your day been so far?
Mark, it's been terrific. I've got so much done in the morning. I've done the market shopping, I've walked the dogs, I've watched some TV.
Met a friend for coffee,
slipped in a sherry. The day is doing really well. Because I'm just still addicted to the sherry from Spain.
Yeah, fair enough. And your trip, you've finally come down from the high of being away for so long?
I think my body has finally detoxed from jamón. I think that would be fair to say. But I still have these moments where I close my eyes and I think I'm looking at Tower Bridge, and I'm not. I'm looking at Princess Bridge.
It's like falling on the pork sword.
But it couldn't have been as bad as those poor journalists this week who jumped on a plane in Moscow thinking that they were going to track down Snowden to find out that they were on the 13-hour flight that
16.
Was dry. 16, was it? A dry flight to Cuba.
Dry flight to Cuba. Couldn't even drink their journalist selves into their usual stupor.
No.
16 hours of being in the plane talking to other journalists about the same dumb story.
But then what would you have chosen? Would you have wanted to be the journalist on the flight going to Cuba, or would you want to have been the journalist in Canberra dealing with the Kevin Rudd, Julia Gillard saga?
Oh, look, I've been enthralled by the whole process. I'm a centrist voter. I vote on politics. I don't vote on parties. So I don't have any political allegiance to either side of the fence, quite frankly.
You must be struggling at the moment then if you vote on politics, because there's not a lot out there.
Well, yeah, donkey vote coming up. But watching this whole process and seeing people put a public face to a disgrace is enthralling to watch the wheels turning and watch the machinations happen live on TV. I just see Rudd as a real careerist. I see Gillard as someone who's done a wonderful job, but she's got a really bad reputation for doing a wonderful job, and I think it all stems from how she got the job rather than anything else. She's not a very charismatic person, but geez, she's done excellent things with things like the NDIS and Gonski reforms and so forth. There's a whole bunch of legislation that was really positive that she's not getting a lot of credit for. I'm certainly no big fanboy of Julia Gillard. She's not like an Apple back product. There, I can be a fanboy. But she's done a great job, and thank you very much for your service. And, I wish her well in her future career. The woman's 51. She's more than just a Werribee lawyer. She's got a great future ahead of her, and I can't wait to see what she gets up to next. She's got some brilliant things in front of her. It'd be very interesting to watch Australia's first bona fide female statesperson.
It will be.
Yeah.
And, of course, she didn't lose an election.
it was going that way, wasn't it?
It was, but she didn't. And she's finally started to get her wardrobe together.
It was an electoral shart, I think it's called.
I'm more concerned that she's starting to look good on camera.
Yeah, she's not a very charismatic person like Bob Hawke was as a leader. And I just think that, you know, she's an excellent lawyer. She's very good at what she does. And she was a very good prime minister, and she was a very strong prime minister. And she did a lot of great things for leading the country. Wasn't so flash on LGBTI issues, like marriage equality. But I think the biggest high school prefect that we have ever known, Mr. Rudd, is going to lead that rainbow path. What do you reckon?
Well, I think with Penny Wong being leader
in that's
the
great
Senate,
too. Yes.
I think that was a great outcome for the week. And I guess there'll be a whole lot of people who are just not going to be talking to Mr. Bill Shorten. I think he might be persona non grata.
Might have shortened his Christmas card list somewhat. But
yes, I think so.
Oh,
but
well.
There were good things this week.
There were a lot of great things this week. Pride all over the place.
Yes, indeed. I went along to the Lena Horne show last night at the Melbourne Recital Centre, which was an amazing tribute to such a phenomenal performer who had so much to do with African American rights in the 60s. Mm. And I really didn't know that about her career. I only knew of her as a very glamorous actress and a wonderful singer. And Mary Wilson, who was from the Supremes,
yes,
was actually singing the Lena Horne songs.
Oh God,
so it was
a
quite a multimedia spectacular last night, and I can't believe it was only on for one night, because I think we probably could have filled the Murdoch Hall three or four times over.
Mm. Yeah, phenomenal women, phenomenal talents, and coming from around the world to show us some of the most amazing gifts that African American people have been able to give the rest of the world.
Very much so, and a lot of hope.
Mm. Excellent. So we also have, we're going to be talking later in the hour about all the Pride events that are coming up this week. Summer in Europe and in the Northern Hemisphere brings on Pride events left, right and centre. So there's lots of big news. Canadian Dave has touched down safely. So all our listeners who want to know about the sexy voiced Canadian Dave, he is safely home, ensconced in Melbourne and work. So he will be coming on soon to talk about his experiences at Pride in Tel Aviv and a few other places. We'll be talking about some events later on. But what else have we got today, Jo?
Today, we have a really special guest in the studio, Mr. Roger Unger. I hope I've pronounced that correct.
Roger Ungers.
Ungers. Oh, it's a plural form.
Oh, my goodness. I so got that wrong. Apologies in advance,
no, that's
Roger.
That's fine. That's fine.
And Roger is a television series maker.
I know, right? You're a bit of a one-man band. I was kind of visiting you coming in with a big drum bass on your back and cymbals on your feet. And doing all these different things at once.
Yeah, the thing is, well, no one else is going to do it, so I've got to do everything. So,
is that why you don't complain? Because there's just no one who's going to listen?
Well, yeah, like kind of all roads kind of end here, so I have all the decision-making, so I'm quite happy with that.
So Roger has produced a TV series, which is actually into its second series. So we could be onto something here. It could go for as long as The Simpsons.
Could go viral.
Oh, look, why not? The sky's the limit.
You could be the next piano-playing cat.
Possibly. Why not? Why not?
With a title of being overseas, maybe not.
No. But being overseas kind of gives away a fair bit of what it is. What's the principle of the show in a nutshell? Being overseas?
Yeah, well, look, essentially the show it's kind of a candid opinion on international travel. So it's basically me going overseas and filming my holiday. You know, I kind of gather all this information and stuff that I've learned about the place, and I kind of share it with everyone. You know, what's information if you can't share it with other people, and hopefully people get something out of it.
And where was your most recent trip, which hasn't aired yet?
My most recent trip was to Japan. So I travelled through Honshu, which is the main island, and also Hokkaido. So, you know, that involves Tokyo, Osaka, Kyoto, and also a little bit of time in Narita. And then...
You mean the airport?
Yeah, the airport town, yeah. You'll actually be surprised. There is some pretty good stuff to see there, so, which is in the series as well.
And I got to have a little bit of a sneak peek of both of the episodes. Tell me, how did you get away with doing the in-flight filming? Because there's been so much controversy around people taking photographs with their iPhones and other devices in flight. How did you get to do that?
I was probably a little bit cheeky, I have to say. So, I just got my camera out and started filming guerrilla style.
Right, okay. Yeah. So they have no idea that there's footage?
No, I guess not, unless they watch the show.
Well, that's what we like. We like a bit of substitute here on the Escape Pod.
So explain for our listeners who may not be aware the reason for the subterfuge.
The what, sorry?
The reason why you had to be so underhanded with your filming just now.
Oh, because the airlines don't like you filming in cabin.
You do it all the time, but was it a Cuban airline? That's what I'm getting at. Was it one of these state secret things? Did you have to fly into Moscow and stay in an airport?
No. I mean, they didn't seem to sort of... I mean, obviously the cabin crew can see you filming, can see you with your camera, so they would have said something. I think it's usually takeoff and when you land that they kind of don't like you to have your cameras out. So,
in case you've got the work experience kid doing the landing.
Bounce.
I'm not sure what kind of carriers you fly with, Mark, but they're not the ones I fly with, and they're certainly not the ones Roger was flying with.
I was living in the Middle East for a long time.
So when you got to Japan, Osaka was your first stop, wasn't it?
Yeah, so I arrived in Osaka, so I spent my first few days there and kind of getting settling into the whole Japanese way of life, and then sort of continued on through to Kyoto. So while I was in Osaka, I went to Kyoto and then came back for the day because they're quite close. Mm-hmm. And then from there kind of continued the rest of my journey.
And
go, Joe.
Oh, I was going to say, you have a bit of a thing for Ferris wheels.
Yeah, look, you know, whenever you see a big Ferris wheel, like in the first series I went to London and obviously did the London Eye. And yeah, every time I see a Ferris wheel, I just seem to want to go on it and just have a joyride. So I don't know what it is. It's just a thing.
Is this a lifelong thing? Were you the kid that was like tearing at your mother's arm to get onto any Ferris wheel related attraction?
I honestly don't know where it's come from. I just see a Ferris wheel. I got to go on a Ferris wheel.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
Been to Luna Park lately?
No, I haven't, no.
There's a good one there.
And I'll have to do it. I'll have to go.
You spend a bit of time with the underwater creatures as well. What was that? The aquarium?
Yeah, well, Osaka is really famous for their aquarium. So they actually have a whale shark in this humongous tank. It's 9 metres deep, and they have all different species. And everyone says, oh, look, you go to Osaka, you've got to go to the aquarium. So I decided I'd go there and just sort of check out what was there. And, you know, it was beyond my expectation. It really is a beautiful, big aquarium.
And how did it work as a tourist? Was everything well signed? I mean, I know from my experience in Japan, not a lot of the time do you see things necessarily translated into English. You have to actually know where you're going. Yeah, what was the aquarium like?
Yeah, it's good. Japan does have, they do have English signs, so you can sort of make your way around. I guess, you know, you kind of go through and it's quite self-explanatory that the aquarium, you kind of go in and you just follow the pathways and go around and then sort of come across all these different sea creatures. Yeah.
Anything you'd never encountered before? Like a mermaid or...?
I think the whale shark for me was the big thing. Like it's the biggest... not fish, it's a mammal, isn't it? Yeah. Yeah, the biggest fish that I'd sort of come across there, and I'd never seen one before. So for me, that was quite amazing to actually see this enormous fish in this humongous tank. Yeah.
And the next stop was Kyoto?
Yeah, Kyoto. So Kyoto is a really ancient city in Japan, and it's really famous for its temples and shrines. I kind of went there to sort of see a bit more of the suburban side of Japan and also the more traditional side as well.
Excellent. What's the suburban side of Japan like? I can't imagine it's all hills, hoists and
it's cramped.
Cricket.
No, it's cramped, Mark. Yeah. There's no room.
Yeah, look, it's quite...
neat. Lots of shoes outside.
Very neat. Very beautiful. It's a very different sort of way of life that they have there. And, you know, the houses, they're not kind of like here. You know, you might see a tin roof out in the country. Here, they've got those big, beautiful sort of tiled roofs with all the little details on it. It was really good to see.
Oh,
very
beautiful.
Different, yeah.
And now we're going back to bamboo forests in Kyoto.
Yeah.
Roger, what did you think of the bamboo forest?
Look, it's unlike anything you've seen. It's... Before I went on to the trip to Japan, I really wanted to see the bamboo forests because it is quite an iconic thing that you kind of... Well, for me, I kind of thought Japan bamboo forest. So that was obviously in Kyoto. Went over there and had a look at these enormous bamboo forests, and it's just a surreal thing. You've never seen anything quite like it in your life. It's really amazing.
And how did you feel when you were actually walking through on those pathways with essentially like a curtain of bamboo on either side? What was the feeling?
It's a really because it's so different, it's really peaceful. When the wind blows through the bamboo kind of clicks together, which is quite nice and quite soothing. And yeah, like I was lucky enough that when I was there was not that many tourists around, so I can kind of just, you know, sort of absorb it and just sort of take it for what it is, and sort of that tranquility that Japan's sort of really famous for. Yeah.
And so you had that almost Zen meditation experience, but that didn't last long because not long after your trip through the bamboo forest, you were getting onto a Shinkansen.
Yeah, absolutely. The
What was that? A Shinkansen? It sounds like a sinking ship.
Well, Shinkansen is the bullet train network that Japan use. Mm. So because Japan has such an enormous population, it's a much more efficient way of them to get from city to city. So as opposed to taking a plane, they can get on the Shinkansen and get to, say, from Osaka to Tokyo quite quickly without having to sort of get on a plane and sort of have all these frequent sort of airlines going through. So I'm told. So,
well, what are they doing with all their extra hydrocarbons? That's what I want to know.
But you have a great tip for people if they're getting on the Shinkansen to head into Tokyo.
Yeah, absolutely. Once you're going from Osaka into Tokyo, it actually goes past Mount Fuji. So there's a beautiful view just from the window, which is in the series. So you'll be able to see that when you watch it. So you just have to make sure that you're on the left-hand side of the train. So you can pay to get a reserved seat and make sure you get a window seat. Therefore, you can sort of see Mount Fuji as you pass by on your way into Tokyo.
Is it a big blur?
The train is fast. You've probably got about 4 to 5 minutes to see it. So you've got to keep checking that window.
So you've got good footage of that, I'm sure. You were poised.
Yeah, I was ready. I was ready to pounce. Yeah. I had my camera right at the window. Yep.
And I noticed there was another great tip that you had for Tokyo, which eluded me, and that was the best place to get an aerial view of the city of Tokyo. Tell everybody about the best place to go.
Yeah, well, the government building in Tokyo. So a lot of people would sort of go, oh, you know, I want to have a good view of Tokyo from the top. I'll go to the Skytree, because the Skytree is just a really big building that kind of stands out. But the government building is actually free. So if you go up to the top of the observation deck, you get this amazing view, really good view. And if it's a clear day, you can actually see Mount Fuji as well.
Well, I think that's a great... They're two really good tips for people who are about to travel to Japan. A, where to sit on the train, and B, how to see the best view in Tokyo for free.
Yeah, absolutely.
Roger, what did you do in Series 1? Because you've got Series 2, so Series 1 must have been pretty successful for you to keep moving on.
Yeah. Well, Series 1... is online. So that was aired on TV as well. So here in Melbourne and also in Perth. So Series 1 is just basically my trips through Europe. So I went to Europe for 2 months, and that kind of, you know, sparked off this whole taking video and then, you know, putting it together in a series and video diary and then, you know, kind of sharing it with people. Yeah.
And when did you go on the first trip?
On the first trip, I went about a year and a half ago. So that was actually my first trip overseas. So for me, it's quite, you know, it's quite interesting to see, as a first-time traveller in the series, me kind of just, you know, learning everything for the first time kind of thing. Yeah.
There's not many people, though, who do their first overseas trip and decide what they'll do is make a series out of it. That's pretty ambitious.
Yeah, well, look, it never really meant to be a online series. My background is in film and TV, so... you know, I couldn't help myself. I had to take the video, I had to take the photos, and then all of a sudden when I got back, I had all of this footage, and I'd planned to do a video diary as well. So I kind of like was filming myself, what I thought about the place, just as sort of a record for myself and maybe to share with my friends. So I kind of brought it together and then started editing it, and then it sort of turned into this thing, and then, you know, it was online, and then now it's on TV, and it's kind of just evolved from that. Yeah.
So it was an organic process. You didn't set out to create what you've created.
No, it all kind of just happened. Yeah.
So where do you see it going? World domination?
Oh, look, I'd love it if a big network, you know, gave me a lucrative TV contract and wanted to commission another one. That'd be fantastic. Yeah.
I think you need to be either a footballer or a footballer's girlfriend to get on postcards.
yeah, no, totally. Well, you know, I've kind of, like, with the show, I did try to actually sort of steer away from that postcard style and that getaway style. It's more a candid, this is the human side of travel. You know, this is an actual person going on a holiday.
Okay, talk to us about that. That's interesting, and that's a really good point. So a lot of people are used to that whole postcard style where reformed footballers and their skinny girlfriends talk at us.
Yeah.
So tell us how you've approached this from your point of view.
Yeah, well, it's kind of like it's... So the show's kind of designed to sort of cover my travels. So I'm not sort of saying, oh, look, we stayed at this hotel. It's got a pool. It's got the amazing rooms. You know, I'm not trying to sell you a place that we've stayed. I'm trying to sort of show that where I've been, and you know, everybody sort of travels here, and you know, I want to sort of want to share my knowledge of what I've learnt, and you know, hopefully help other travellers out there, you know, on their decisions when they go overseas.
Mm.
Yeah. And how do you think you went from your first trip? Because I must admit, when I was watching the first series, the one thing that stopped me completely was that you went on a Contiki tour.
Yeah.
And I sort of went, wow, I'm going to meet someone who's done that and survived.
Yeah, yeah.
And,
yeah.
And then obviously when you went to Japan, you felt that you had more independence and you went about your travels in a slightly different way.
Yeah.
Are you able to talk a little bit about how you got the confidence between the two and what the experience was like?
Absolutely. Well, Contiki is actually something I'd wanted to do my whole life. So I figured, you know, my first trip, it's a great way to sort of socialise. I really do like bus tours because, you know, everything is organised for you. You know, it gives you a taste of what you, you know, are interested to see. And I was there with my friend as well. So she was with me as well. And we kind of did, we did two Contiki tours. We did one in Ireland for St. Patrick's Day, which was full on. And then we did one for 20 days, which kind of went around Europe and yeah, just kind of just seeing all of the landmarks there. Yeah. But yeah, they are full on. By the end of it, I was exhausted.
Did you find any enduring friendships?
Yeah, look, I've got friends all over the world now. When I go to Japan, I actually met the girl in Japan on the Contiki tour from Europe. So I actually visited her in Tokyo and, you know, have another friend in America who I'd love to visit as well. So, you know, the Contiki tour really do form good friendships. And I've probably got about five people here in Melbourne who I still catch up with.
Oh, really?
On
okay.
Well, yeah.
That's probably the most positive Contiki feedback I've heard, and that's great.
Yeah.
And it's a surprising thing to hear.
Yeah.
Most people are quite derogatory about the Contiki tour and what it is. It's the ABC to another bloody church, another bloody castle.
Yeah. Well, I was there for a long time. So for me, it was kind of like, you know, I'll get a taste for this place, see if I want to go back there again kind of thing.
And where have you gone back to, or what have you put on your list of things to do to go back?
Look, I'd love to go back to London. I really did form a really good relationship with London. It was a great place to be. I'd love to see Paris again. I'd love to go to Austria. Like when I booked the tour, I didn't realise that we were going to Austria. And when I went there, I was just like, this place is so beautiful. And, you know, it's all kind of adventure and, you know, I was lucky enough to go paragliding there, and I'd love to go do whitewater rafting and do all that kind of adventure stuff that they're kind of really, really famous for over there. Mm. Yeah.
And were you ill when you were in Austria? Did I pick that up?
That was Switzerland.
Ah.
Yeah. So I kind of, I became a bit sick. Like I was on Contiki tour and, you know, all that sort of
partying. So it was alcohol poisoning?
A little bit. So yeah, in Switzerland I did become sick, but you know, I didn't want to sort of waste my time. I'm one of these people. I don't want to waste my time when I'm over there. I want to make sure I'm seeing things. And
so you saw the inside of a hospital? Is
No. We there was a train that went up to Jungfrau, and that was the only opportunity that we had to do it. So I was kind of like sick, and I went up there, and turns out it was actual complete whiteout. So it was probably not worth it in the end. But yeah, no hospitals, just sitting in bed.
Jill Scott's coming to Melbourne soon.
She is indeed.
Well, not soon, November.
Yeah, that's soon.
Is it?
Spring Racing Carnival. Haven't you already thought about what you're going to be wearing?
No, Joe, no.
Oh, Mark, get with it.
I have a floored robe.
A floored robe?
No, I don't really. Actually, I have everything lined up by shade. I've got to be honest, I'm really neat. Like Jerry Seinfeld neat. Yeah. No, if anybody heard that, that was Mark, our panellist. Thank you very much for tuning in, Mark. We've got some an amazing guest, Roger Ungers.
We're trying.
It always gets people. It always does. It's fine. Yep. Ungers.
Rog is here, and he has been producing his own sort of travelogue. So tell us about the practicalities of doing it, because this is the interesting thing. You're not, as we said before, you're not postcards. You don't have a big production crew and hair and lighting and makeup and so forth, and you're not a video log. What you're talking about is the travel experience.
Yeah, absolutely.
So you're doing a lot of self pieces to camera, I'm assuming. And
Yeah.
So what are the practicalities? How could speak to us as if we are budding Rogers? How would we go about doing this?
Okay. Yeah, so I have a digital SLR camera, so that's kind of like...
Fancy.
That's my kind of my tool of trade, and everything kind of revolves around me having this camera because it takes footage as well. So, I essentially use that camera and, you know, I'll be going around taking my footage, and the great thing about it is you're not sort of looking like an obvious crew as well, because you've got your camera and it just looks like a normal camera, but really I'm taking footage. And then, you know, occasionally I'll flip it around and I'll have a little bit of a chat about where I am and, you know, what I feel about the place and, you know, sort of my reflection on it and, you know, maybe some interesting tips, depending on how I'm feeling before I talk to camera.
Yeah, so good point. How do you script it? Do you have a whole lot of bullet points? Do you sort of sit at home and do a PowerPoint presentation to yourself?
No, absolutely not. It's completely on the fly. It's, you know, I kind of work guerrilla style, I suppose I should say. Yeah, I mean, I go in there and I just film what I film and, you know, what I think's interesting.
Like a bit of upskirt action or something?
Oh, well, no, none of that.
At the Vatican.
Oh, goodness gracious, no.
This is a low-hanging fruit.
Oh, you're terrible.
Meant every word.
So, yeah, I'll just shoot the footage on the fly and then I kind of get all this footage back and then I just sort of make something of it at the end. And then that's when I do my research and that's when I kind of script everything and sort of see what I can do with this footage that I've taken.
Okay. Mm. Okay. So I guess that gives you opportunity when you're editing, you can go back and then you can dub over some footage you've taken and sort of introduce points that you hadn't before or re-edit things or reconsider the words that you've used when you're out live.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah. So it's kind
That's how he does it.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's kind of half voiceover based and also me talking to camera. So the voiceover is obviously kind of something that I have researched. So I have researched and sort of given a bit more of a background on where I actually am. So some interesting facts that I thought might be interesting to let people know about and, you know, history or anything that sort of, you know, kind of sparks up and think, oh, that'd be an interesting point for me to talk about. I'll put that in.
Mm. Okay. And so you were recently in Dubai, which is a city close to my heart. I've lived there for half my adult life. It's an interesting place. What was your one-day impression?
I'm sorry, half your adult life?
Yes.
I think you're being flexible with the truth.
Yes. That's why I throw in the adult bit.
Dubai. Look, Dubai, to me, I really have... an appreciation for modern architecture. So for me, it was just like, it was amazing just to sort of be walking around and looking at these beautiful buildings because, you know, they're so tall and they're so amazing. And, you know, visually, it's just an amazing place to be and so opulent and just sort of, you know, just a really visually beautiful city to be in. Yeah, for me, that was my kind of first impression. Yeah.
Hmm. Interesting take. Mm. I think a lot of people have that because it is superficially a very impressive city, very modern. Strange that there's a whole run of 50 to 60 story apartment buildings along a road, then flat desert for 200 kilometres. But I think that adds to the visual impact of this, the strangeness of how it's evolved like it has. And a city that has absolutely no need for high rise has excelled and specialised in high rise.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's kind of its hook, I suppose. You know, you see sort of these big buildings and then you have like the Palm Jumeirah with the big island that kind of looks like a palm and stuff. It's like, you know, come here, we look so amazing kind of thing. Mm. And it worked for me, so drew me in.
So, Mark, it was interesting. You said that just a little bit earlier there was no need for there to be any high-rise buildings. Roger, you've said how beautiful they are to look at. Mm. What has been the impetus behind having that height if there was no need for it? What's the desire from the local population to be high?
Mine's bigger than yours.
Ah. Yeah, I think I'd agree with that too. It's kind of like...
Four words, Joe.
Yeah.
The architectural school of four words.
Mm. Yeah, I suppose it's kind of like saying... you know, driving a BMW to, you know, like a Corolla. It's like, why would you have the BMW? You don't have to have a BMW, but it looks great. So, you know, everyone look at me kind of thing.
I think there are more practical reasons. You know, the windows go up and down faster, you know.
Yeah.
You get your money's worth in a Beamer.
Yeah, that's true. This is true. It is a very nice car.
Okay, so where next? What's your next plan? Are you going to take this footage and then shop it around and then see if you can get a funded program? Roger goes one on one with Kenya.
Yeah. Well, look, I have. I do have ideas for it to go further. I'm going to be looking into other community stations. I've actually got one of the more mainstream stations looking at it. I won't say who they are, but they're actually assessing it.
It'll
at
be
the
Channel
moment.
9.
I can't say who it is, but
I tried.
Yeah, so it's being assessed at the moment, and you know, we're kind of see what happens from there.
And how can people actually get hold of what you've produced so far?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, look, the first season is actually on Vimeo, so it's on a Vimeo page, and the link to that, so it's www.vimeo.com/channels/beingoverseas.
Okay.
So it's a bit of a mouthful. If you
we'll
just
tweet that and we'll put that on our Facebook page now. So
yeah,
if anybody
excellent.
Wants to have a look, just wait for about 5 minutes and we'll pop it online so
yeah.
you can click and go.
Yeah, no worries.
Click and ogle.
No worries. And also, just to let everyone know that it is on Channel 31 and it will be, the first episode will be this Tuesday, the 2nd of July at 7 p.m. And then the second episode will be on Tuesday the 9th at 7 p.m. And that's the second series, which covers Japan.
Okay, I'm looking forward to that. My partner's very into Japanese things, and we were talking today about a trip to Japan in the future. We're going to try and find a time when I'd like to go when the cherry blossoms are going crazy.
Yeah.
That's around about March?
Yeah, kind of just out of summertime. A really big, really big famous time. The Japanese love to just drink sake under the cherry blossoms.
Oh, my God, yeah. I love to drink sake,
yeah.
Just full stop.
Yeah.
Not under anything. But Joy endorses responsible consumption of alcohol.
Of course, yeah.
Roger, go wild responsibly.
Roger, thank you so much for coming onto the Escape Pod today. You've been a fabulous guest, and I
no
think
worries.
You've really given people a lot of food for thought about how they can go travelling, why they go travelling, and what it's like to actually experience the one world that we live in. So thank you very much.
Yeah, no worries. Thanks for having me.
One quick last question. How often do you say, selfie?
Look, I'm not a big selfie person, so never.
Oh, okay. I thought you might have some
Sorry,
Instagram
I would have liked
feed.
To have given you a better answer. But yeah.
You're on the Escape Pod, Joy 94.9. You're with Joe and Mark. We've got a couple more things coming up. Joe?
Mark, it's time for you to get out your diary and consider where you might like to be in the next few weeks.
Well, it's just pride.
It is.
Pride.
It's getting warm and it's getting sunny in other parts of the world, although it's pretty difficult to explain that to the English tourists who are here right now dressed for their summertime in our winter.
I have noticed a lot of in reddened shirts.
Yes, it's like a sea. It's like the parting of the Red Sea. Mm,
I just haven't seen many Australian fans out there. It says a lot about appeal of rugby to different cultural groups. When in Melbourne, which is a sport mad town, I think I've counted about 12 people wearing the green and gold. And I was on a train from St Kilda, which was like the Red Devil Express. It was head to toe people dressed up, getting so excited about the football. And I had to ask the person, what time does it start? Apparently it's in the evening.
Oh, yes. It'll be this evening. They've got the entire day to get themselves lubricated.
Yeah, well, from my home in St Kilda, I had to walk past a bunch of places on Fitzroy Street, and there were people who had 6 beer bottles around the two of them at 11:30 this morning. I was going, right, this is going to be a long day for someone, probably whoever's sitting next to you two.
Indeed it will. But if you're able to get out of Melbourne,
yep.
There are a couple of places that I think would be worthwhile seeing. Over in San Diego, they've got their Pride Festival, which is happening from the 12th to the 14th of July. And the one that's really caught my eye, though, is the World Out Games, which are going to be held in Antwerp this year. Now, I normally think of Antwerp for diamonds, but clearly I'm a little bit out of touch because every 4 years we have the World Outdoor Games from the 31st of July until the 11th of August. And this is a big deal. I mean, last time that they were held in Copenhagen, they think that they generated the equivalent of 10 million euro in support dollars to the host city.
Wow.
So I don't know why we're stuffing around always wanting the Formula One Grand Prix. We should be getting
the gays to run around the lake.
Indeed, because they
have... Which is really a Tuesday night.
Well, I guess. You're right. But there's 35 other sports that put together the Out Games. Mm. And in addition to that, they have a cultural and a human rights festival that goes with it. So I'd be getting myself to Antwerp.
Mm. Antwerp's a great town.
Oh, it's beautiful. Mm. Yeah, and I love the station, how you actually come into it. I think the station might be the only thing really that was left and wasn't bombed during World War II, and it's a stunning piece of architecture, if you like old world, Belle Epoque style. Mm. Architecture. So they would be the two things that I would be doing.
So train stations and sporty gays, go to Antwerp.
Absolutely, and pick up some loose diamonds while you're there. Ticks all of my
boxes.
You talking
about Dolly Diamond?
No,
oh,
I'm
we'll
talking
have
about
phone calls in a minute.
We will. But of course, it's school holiday time here in Melbourne.
Yeah, it is. I was wondering why the trams were so pleasurable in the morning.
It is. And I was thinking about, well, what could be some of the day trips that would be good? And I thought there'll be a lot of people. Obviously, all of those Melbourne football supporters will be heading off to the snow in their Range Rovers and SUVs. But a trip down to Sorrento might be quite lovely. There's a lot to happen.
Really?
To do
it's
down
school
there.
Holidays to. Oh, it's winter.
Yeah, it's winter. You know, a nice walk along the beach, you know, a stop in one of the little cafes
Get
that
a fish
are there.
And, chip.
And yeah, look at the ferry going across to Queenscliff. And the other thing that I
do
thought
some Minogue
of,
spotting.
The Minogue spotting?
Yeah, Kylie Minogue owns a place on French's Island.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Mm.
I used to go to
It's littered with Minogues this time of year. Tripping over them.
Is there only two or
it's
is
like
there
Camberwell.
More? Well, if you were going to trip over a Minogue, you might like to take a picture.
Is it like when you expect Kylie and you get Danny?
Well, no. It's more a little bit like we've now got Melbourne photography tours.
What?
So if you were actually wanting to find out how you could take better photos when you're on tour, not quite to the same extent, I'm sure, that Roger has done, but if you'd like to get a feel for how you actually do take photos in the city when you are a tourist, there are photography tours that go for 3 hours, and it's photographytravel.net. I just came across it this morning, and I thought, what a great idea for people to put into their plan for preparing to go for a trip.
So where do they do this?
Here in Melbourne.
Yeah, so in the city.
In the city. So you just log on and you book and it's, $99 and you get 3 hours and you learn how to take photographs in a city.
Okay, that's cool. I like the idea of that. I might go do that myself.
I thought that was pretty cool. We've got the film festival coming up.
A couple of weeks ago we had, what was his name? The guy from the States who was talking about his photography books. Dan. A fantastic opportunity. If you go and get yourself some skills, create some beautiful photos of yourself and then be able to turn that into your own travel book and gift book and coffee table book and calendar and
blurb.
Pop a baby in a pot like Ann Geddes did. Make a fortune.
Yeah, maybe not.
Maybe
but
not.
Anyway, that was on blurb.com, so definitely have a look at that. But I thought the idea of doing a travel photography workshop
like that
would be fantastic.
Mm.
So we might even find out who's behind that and get them on the show.
Yeah, good idea. That's a great story. I like that.
Yeah. There's a lot going on at the Melbourne Recital Centre. They've got a full program of events happening at the moment. The MTC production is well underway with David Wenham.
And also
Wenham.
Hollywood costumes.
My favourite exhibition.
We'll be talking to them coming up soon, the people from the Australian Centre for Moving Image. The Acme guys are having us come and have a trot around the clothes. If people don't know, the original Audrey Hepburn from Breakfast at Tiffany's frock.
The Givenchy?
Yeah. That she was staring in the windows lustfully at those diamonds. You know, they don't have them there in that hour of the morning. They take them away and put them in a safe overnight.
Yeah, I don't lust after Tiffany diamonds anymore.
Why?
I've moved on to Van Cleef.
Oh.
It's just a personal
thing.
So
you're more of a Bulgari girl.
That's a little bit gauche.
Is it?
Yeah, I prefer something a little old world.
Oh, okay, so Van Cleef and Arapels.
Yeah, Cartier.
Mm.
Mm, definitely.
Cat's whiskers.
That's why diamonds are a girl's best friend.
This Joycast is a free service brought to you by Joy94.9. Support Joy94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
This podcast was produced by Joy Media. You can support Joy's diverse sound and diverse community this June by donating to Joy Radiothon 2024. Go to joy.org.au/radiothon. And remember, we all flourish with joy.